You are listening to episode 119 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. On a scale from 1 to 10, Google products are okay.
Episode 119 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is January 5th, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my resolved brother, James Furlough.
You know, Google Plus changed the way that Hangouts work now, where it sets it as you actually schedule an event that you make public or private. I should see if there's a way to just have it not be public or something. I don't know. But now people are, like, responding yes and no to the event. It's weird. I liked it when you could just do the video and not worry about it. But anyways, there's my first complaint for the show.
Hey, man. Perfect timing. So what have you resolved for anything this year?
Oh, I totally do. So every year, my wife and I do goals. And
I actually have goals, a blog post. Or resolutions. I want resolves.
Then I guess we don't do that.
Dang it. Okay, I guess goals will have to do.
Yeah, so we actually we're those people. So we actually sit down at the beginning of each year and say, like, hey, what do we want to accomplish? And we start out by looking at kind of our bigger vision for our lives. You know, what do we want our legacy to be? Where do we want to see ourselves 15, 20 years? Yeah, we're those people, like I said. And then from there, we have cascading goals for each other. And so I have 7 of them this year. Pretty exciting. It's total preview, I guess. So like I said, I'm blogging about it. It's going live tomorrow. On OutsideTheRatRace.com. But my first one is I've been working on this, you're going to love it, this one-year Bible plan.
Yeah.
And I'm in year 3 of it. So. So for a few years I tried to do the one-year Bible plan, and it just, you know, it didn't work. You know, I wouldn't get through and I'd get discouraged. And so finally I said, no, I'm going to – let me pick a pace that's actually reasonable and that I can do. And so I essentially said, well, let me – do it in 3 years instead of one. And I have. And so I am 2/3 of the way through it. And I'm
nice.
Walking into the last third. Pretty exciting. The other one is I have a little bit of a health goal. You will probably laugh at me, but that's okay. I used to weigh 155 pounds. I no longer weigh 155 pounds.
What do you weigh?
I would like to once again.
Oh, come on.
I'm coming in around 175.
Holy cow.
I know, right?
What's weird to me is that, like, 175, I would look emaciated. That's 20 pounds heavier than you want to be. That's just crazy to me. It's weird that we have the same, you know, Gregor Mendel square, as it were, you know?
Yeah, so I knew you would laugh at me. But yeah. The other one, another health focus of mine, is to do 70 push-ups in a row.
Ooh, that's a big one.
I want to increase my strength. I can do 20, and so the idea is to add one a week. So this week was 21. So I did that for the first time today. So at the beginning of each show, you can ask me how many push-ups did you do, James?
You're not gonna. I don't know. Maybe this is just me, but I don't like to do a. I like to do a what's exponential growth or logarithmic growth? No, logarithmic. Which one's? What's the one where it, like, shoots up really quickly and then, like, you know, tables off towards the asymptote? I guess that's the other side of the exponential curve. I don't really remember.
Logarithmic.
Well, yeah, but whatever. It's, you know what I mean. I like to start off, like, getting as close as I can and then slowly approach where I want to go. You know. I just don't know. Ramping up one push-up per week sounds unbelievably daunting to me. I want to get up to, like, 50 and then, like, do 5 a month or something. I don't have, like – sounds rough.
Well, five a month is even more than what I was saying, but that's okay.
That's a good point.
Same. So that's the other one. Okay. And I think I can do it. Another one, my fourth one, is I don't want to have any expenses this year above $2,000. So I went back and I looked at my adult life. And even if you include college, because college tuition was a large expense above $2,000 each year and semester. And so, but even after I graduated, every single year I've had something that was at least above $2,000. Now, some of them were buying investment properties, you know, so one could argue were they good or bad expenses. Doesn't matter. I don't want to have any of those this year. So, that's my goal. And I should say that my overall theme this year is consistency. So, you know, reading the Bible, be consistent, eating healthy, consistent, do push-ups, consistent, no big spending things. That's consistency. I also would love to increase my pay at HP. This is the kind of thing where I don't know how I feel about it. I got promoted last year, but didn't get a pay increase. So, you know, you're like, oh, so I'm expected to do more, I guess, for the same. And so, so I'd like to prove to them, no, I'm actually more valuable, and I've got a plan to do that. I also want to increase my side business income, and I've got a plan for that. And then I have a social focus as well, and that is we noticed that we moved into our new house, and we only hosted one family for dinner after we moved in. So in this last, you know, 6-7 months, we're like, that's lame. We could do better. So we want to host at least 6 meals at our house in the next year. Which I wanted to set it at 12, and Jesse was like, be reasonable. Let me just put it out there. Our big problem is that we don't have any kids. And so oftentimes we go over to someone else's house because it's just easier.
It's hard to convince the bechildren to leave their house when you don't have any. They're looking at you like, really? You're going to make us get a babysitter, come over to you, worry about our kids the whole time when it could be just as easy, way easier for you to come over here? Yeah. That's, you know what? That actually is a reasonable conundrum.
Yeah. So I would say, I mean, we hang out at friends' house. I mean, we did a lot more than 12, you know, dinners with people. I'm guessing this month alone we will probably do 5 or 6, but maybe one of them will be at our house.
Yeah.
And so those are my seven goals. I want to be consistent that year. How about you? Do you have any resolves?
Man, oh man. So I thought I had a list of them. And then I went to church this morning and I got kind of blown up because they were very self-improvement focused, which isn't inherently bad, but it's just not how I want my life to be focused. I want my life to be focused on other people and helping other people and being good in the community and you know. And so why would I set my goal? Although self-improvement are foundational steps towards being able to do those things, why would I make the goal line end at me? Why wouldn't I make the goal line do these things so that I can, you know, make the world a better place in X, Y, and Z ways, you know? And so that changed. You know, it started out with like health goals and I want to get to my goal weight this year, which I think is, you know, there's nothing wrong with that goal, but it's just not necessarily, it's like, what is the point if that is the end goal? There is no point, and it's not sustainable if that's the only reason. There's no reason to do it unless it has some other purpose. So I want to participate in more like athletic events, but I think what I really need to start thinking about is like, how can I, you know, build communities and help improve other people's health by bringing people along? And so I think my goal needs to be not sign up for a 10K. It's got to be get 5 people to go to a 10K with me, you know, or, you know, goals are more along that sort of a mentality. one of my big ones is I want to do better saving money this year. I want to have, you know, I want to be more intentional with my money.
Yeah.
And at the same time, not sacrifice the, you know, enjoying today, you know, for what it is. So it's like, you know, I put juxtaposed, save, you know, X, Y, and Z on money and don't spend money on this, but right below it, like, also go to concerts, you know, like, so, which I think, you know, I have to think about what that means. But honestly, there's one big one that I've almost decided that I think I almost want to put everything else, like, I don't want to say I don't want to have any other goals, but I don't want to act like I have any other 2014 goals other than this one. Because at some point I have to accept the fact that either I'm serious about this or I'm never going to do it. And at this point, the direction I've been going, I think the reality of it is I'm never going to be a published author unless I actually just go and try and get the book published. And I've had the book written for going on 5 years now. At what point do you just say, what are you waiting for? And so I think, you know, the more and more I think about it, the more and more I go, there's really very little holding me back, other than myself and worry and doubt and trepidation and all of those sorts of emotions. So, I think I have no doubt I'll accomplish more this year just because there are things that I wanted. You know, it's not like I'm verbalizing these things that I've wanted for a couple of months now and turning them into my 2014 resolutions. But I think the reality of it is, as far as those goals go, they don't happen this year. Like, who cares? Whereas getting published, I think, is a big one. I think it's worth
all right.
Audibly saying, like, you know, I need to make it, you know, it's like, yeah, I just need to make it. It just has to happen.
Cool. So
there's that.
That's a good goal.
Yeah. I think so. But you know what? We're not here to talk about this week, James. New Year's resolutions. This week, we're here.
I was having fun.
I know. To talk about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations dealing back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology that they are developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has to tell you about him working at HP. And so that they don't fire him because one of his goals is to get paid more.
And by, let's be clear here, by providing a lot of value and being an awesome employee and, you know, making it so that they recognize it. And they're like, boom. You know, or that it's undeniable. Like, oh, yeah, James, totally. So that's one of my goals. Those guys who I work for, but during this podcast, I don't represent them or any of their opinions. And this is actually really important for our very first segment. After we get done with this, but yeah, so I work for HP, but I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
That is really important. Okay, I'm going to trust you. I'm just going to trust you because we're going with it.
Trust me.
If you want to follow us throughout the week when we post, you know, cool pictures of what we did on New Year's Eve or delicious looking pizzas that we eat, you can follow us on all sorts of forms of social media. My Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlow, and my Instagram is Next Wiggin 4, just NEXTWIGGIN 4, as in Ender Wiggin of Ender's Game fame.
I am at James Furlow on the Twitter and jamesfurlow.com on the rest of the web.
Cool. If you want to find out more about the show, you can always go to the show website. It's furloughbros.com. We got all sorts of clicks and links there. All the articles we talk about this week, all the articles we talk about in other weeks. There's not going to be any articles for last week because we didn't talk about any. But don't worry about it. Listen to the show. It was really entertaining. Just power through the whole 3 hours of it. I'm still kind of astounded we managed to go that long.
Entertaining and insightful.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? We were laughing No, we spent like 2 hours talking about the past stuff, and then just an hour on the predictions. No, it was a hour and a half on both. We were actually right down the middle.
Really?
I was impressed.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it's funny. I mean, like,
so if all you care about is predictions, it's an hour and a half. I actually have a separate show cut for it. So go to furtherbros.com. You'll see the two right there. One of them says the post-dictions. The other one says the predictions. It's pretty well labeled.
Yeah, nice.
You know what a post-diction is.
I like it. But what's important about the post-dictions, though, is that it's that we were right. That's what validates the predictions. I mean, the predictions, like, you know, anybody can predict anything, but if you have no track record, what's it worth? This is what it's worth, is basically what we're saying. It's worth at least tens of dollars. So value directly to the customer. Don't quote
me on that. Which you can give to us at furtherbros.com/store. Buy something worth at least $10. And, yeah,
nice.
You get a cool shirt or something from it.
I like it. Man, I got to be honest. As I look through these lists of things, my Mac Pro lust is ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous. I look through all of our articles. I'm just like, you know what I really want? Mac Pro. I watched a 15-minute unboxing video today.
That's pretty bad.
I don't have anything to do with it. I don't have any reason to own it, but I want one so bad I can't stand it. Let's not talk about that.
Instead, let's talk about something new that I got this week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay. Oh, yeah. You highlighted the wrong color. Oh, man. James is holding up an iPad Mini.
I thought blue was my color.
Don't worry about it. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Don't worry about it.
Okay. I've got right here my hot little hands.
The bezel looks kind of weird on your iPad Mini, and it says HP on your iPad Mini. I don't get it.
It's really weird, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I have in my hot little hands an HP Slate.
Oh, baby.
There it is. A Slate 7-2800, for those of you who care about the numbers.
You know what I love about this? Sorry, go. I'm not going to interrupt.
Go ahead. You can love anything.
Okay, you know what I love about that? It's the fact that they go with the name Slate. They call it a Slate. Because, and this like dates back to when Microsoft didn't know what the iPad was going to be called. They like, was it going to be a tablet? But they already had tablet computers, and they knew it was going to be like it was going to be slightly different, so they had to give it a different name. And so they came up with the whole idea of the Slate computer. Everybody was like, that's a really stupid name. Like, it makes me think of, like, a slate of granite rock. It's like, slates are heavy. I want something light. And then Apple came out with the iPad, and Microsoft, you know, came out with the Surface, and Google came out with their tablets. And they all sort of became tablets, and everybody moved on to the name of the tablet. Except HP, who stuck it out with Slate. I don't know.
That's right.
It actually sounds cool nowadays. Is it's like it doesn't have the same, like, you know, and it gives it a different name. I don't know. Yeah, come on.
I understand. I understand where you're coming from. This is the first generation Slate.
Okay.
So they actually, you can't actually buy this anymore because they're now on Gen 2.
Okay.
But I won it way back when I did that trip to Las Vegas for HP Discover. And it was one of those – they were running this contest where they had like these little business cards type pieces of paper on tables. And they were like, oh, take a picture and post it on Instagram and, you know, hashtag HP Discover or something like that. Yeah. And you could also tweet it out. And they're like – and then we'll randomly pick people to give away stuff. And I was totally like, oh, yeah, me and three other people are totally doing this. I'm going to win.
That's awesome.
And so I did. And I did a couple each day because it was like you could do up to three entries a day. And so I did. And I ended up winning. It was awesome. And they were like, yeah, we'll get it to you by November. Mm-hmm. So I got it this week.
Perfect timing.
I honestly thought they, like, forgot about me or that somehow I got disqualified and, you know, whatever. You never know, I guess. But hey, HP keeps their promises when they make a promise. Actually, it wasn't HP. It was some other promotional organization was doing it and stuff like that. Yeah, it was kind of crazy. I won, and so they sent me a direct message on Instagram, and then were like, hey, give us your email. And then so I gave them that, and then they gave me a phone number to call, and I called that, and you know, and then they went from there. So what this means, this has huge implications for my life, in essence.
Yes.
Number one, HP runs good old Android.
What here, version?
But it's 4.1. Which one's that?
That's Jelly Bean or Cupcake or
let's see.
Apple Pie. I don't
Android 4.1. I know, it's some dessert. Cupcake? No, that's too early. Jelly? No, that's 4.3. Oh, wait, maybe 4.
I thought 4.0 was Jelly Bean, and then 4.4 was Kit Kat, and so it was, that was what was so weird about their like their naming
Jelly
convention. They
4.1 is Jelly Bean.
Right.
It's Jelly Bean.
I don't actually know what that means. I have no concept of the different dessert dishes versus their features.
Well, it's obviously if it's not 4.4. They're currently on 4.4, right?
Which is Kit Kat.
Behind.
Right.
Sure. So anyways, so it's running that. I actually looked, and HP doesn't make it super easy to root this device. And so I won't be messing with it anytime soon. I'll probably wait a while before I try to figure that out. You know, they're still kind of got their Windows mentality of let's lock it down and not let you mess with things easily.
Right.
Unlike the Nexus systems where apparently you can root them in like 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, yeah, you don't need any special software. Well, it's like you need to somehow side boot on this other bootloader. And then once you do that, and they say that's the tricky part. And then once you've got it, then you can actually root it, and then once it's rooted, you can do whatever you want with it. So so it's got that. It's got some cool to plug the HP stuff. There is some cool HP software that they embedded in here to make it super easy to print from your tablet.
surprise.
Yeah, well, it's like, yeah, we don't really care on this show how it works. But trust me, it makes it so that it can switch networks all automatically and easily. And most tablets don't do that, including iPads, which is annoying when you're trying to use some of that stuff. But it's a function really of the technology. Yeah, hey, you know what? A lot of people do. It's a highly valuable thing. You may not, but that's okay. So what this means, essentially, is I get to try Android for the first time, you know, and like legitimately use it. I get to see what it's like to have a tablet to see if I will use that, if I like the 7-inch form factor or not. It's Wi-Fi only, and so I'll get to decide or see if, you know, does that feel limiting to me or not? Because, you know, eventually I have talked about getting a tablet, and so now it's kind of like I get to cheat and use one. Because it is, it's the first generation hardware, and so it's not as powerful as one would like. I mean, it was like, they came out with their new one, and it's, you know, twice as fast and three times as awesome and stuff like that. So this was clearly just their first time doing it, and, you know, it works, I guess. There's a couple my very first impressions of Android, outside of the hardware stuff, is, I am opening myself up here, but that's okay, I'm going to do it anyways. Not as good as iOS.
Now I want to hear the justification for this. I've always tried to back my statements of why I picked iOS over Android with like actual bullet points of things that iOS does better.
I mean, so let me rephrase this. It's not bad. I could definitely use it on a regular basis. You know, if this were my only choice, I wouldn't be like, oh man, I'd rather go without. You know what I mean? I find myself asking myself because, I mean, let's be honest. There's like, for example, Republic Wireless. You could do all your phone stuff for $25 a month.
Which is a good deal.
which is an amazing deal. I mean, we're talking unlimited talk, unlimited text, and you get unlimited 3G data. And if you want 4G, it's $40 a month.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
Yeah, exactly. But you got to have – they give you a choice of two phones, and they're both Androids because they embed some software on there that allows you to transfer quickly between or seamlessly between Wi-Fi and cellular. And so when you're within Wi-Fi, all of your phone calls and your text messages are all over Wi-Fi, to which they're like, what's super cool about that is if you're like on an airplane and you got the go-go internet, it's like, yeah, you can you can make phone calls and send text messages. It works because it's made to do that.
Yeah, so, it's like iMessages works in airplanes. I've used it before.
Yeah,
it's
awesome. Exactly. But they're like, but you're not restricted to iMessage, right?
Which is really nice because, you know, except all of my friends on these phones, so I don't know.
Well, I know. So there's my plug for public wireless. See how I'm like, you know, I'm drawn to that, right? Oh my gosh, $25 a month. That's very reasonable. Yeah. But it's Android, right? And so I find myself like going, okay, could I live with it? And that's part of my question, right? Is it, quote, good enough where that would make sense? Because, you know, I'm paying – what are we paying right now? I don't even know. I think I'm paying twice that right now per phone. So I think, it's around $100, somewhere in there. So, I mean, we're talking about saving $50 a month. You know, that's – real and you know adds up, but anyways, the point that I was going for was asking myself, can I live with Android? And I think the answer is yes from just using it for the 4 days, 3 days that I've had it. Having said that, I don't know how much of this is because the Slate's form factor versus, you know, others, the Nexus might be better, but it's just a lot of the apps, you can tell they're not as fully featured. You know, like for example, the Facebook app, it feels like it's just the web page that they put an app wrapper around. So it doesn't flow quite as nicely. There's a lot of stuff. Some people are like, oh, I got sick about the transitions or whatever, which I think was a small majority that got blown up because it's Apple. You know, it's just like, you know, the transitions are not quite as slick and smooth. Like with another, like an example here is with the Kindle app, which I'm super excited. I was doing a lot of reading, and now it's like, oh, cool. Now I have a tablet to read on.
Yeah.
And on the iPhone, it gives you the choice of like the page turn effect versus just slide over. With this one, you just get the slide over.
Right.
You know, that's your one and only option. There's Feedly. It only half works. Kind of annoying because it's I use that annoying. All the time. I find that if the RSS feed is, you know, if the content is embedded in the feed, I can open it, no problem. But you know how sometimes you want to open up a link and go to the actual web page to see it? I would say half the time it crashes on me.
That's annoying.
Yeah, and it's little things like that, right? Where it's just like, oh, that should have just worked. Or they also give you a massive amount of control. I would say like too much control. Like when you, let's say like our mom sent me a pin on Pinterest, right? And I opened it up, clicked the link, it took me to the browser, and then asked me, do you want to open this in the browser or would you like to use your Pinterest app? I was like, oh, you use the Pinterest app. Do you want to do this just this one time or always? Like, oh, I'm not sure. Always, you know, so it's just like, you know, it's, you can customize it to do exactly what you want, which I guess is nice. There's a part of me that's like, can we give the, just make an assumption option? What do you think I want?
Assumption option.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, and so, I mean, that would be kind of cool. I must admit, it was super awesome to type in my Google credentials and have Gmail and contacts and calendar and Google Plus, all that stuff just be there.
Work.
That truly is magical. I remember when Google Music came out, I took the 3 weeks to upload all my music online, and it's still there. So, you know, so tap on the app, boom, there's my library. It's like, whoa, that's pretty awesome.
That is cool.
So I like that a lot, for sure. Yeah, that was a big deal. And it's real Gmail, you know, and so it works as you would expect it to,
yeah,
which I really liked. You know, they don't have folders that you're messing around with. You're not trying to make it work with the Apple stuff. It does what you would expect.
I only use the Gmail app on iOS. I don't even bother with Gmail anymore. I think it's great. And the best part about it is it opens all your links directly into Chrome.
I do have the Chrome browser on here. It came preloaded on it. And I do like it. I would argue it is better than the Safari browser.
Really?
Yeah. It just, you know, it's got the traditional tabs and stuff like that. They've figured out the whole text highlighting thing better than I think Apple has, where it does a little arrow thing that you can then move around instead of doing the magnifying glass and you're like trying to guess. You don't have to get it right the first time with them.
Yeah, I guess.
I do like that. Yeah, I don't know. It's like I said, it's there's some good stuff, definitely. I like it. I could probably live with it. At this point in time, iOS is a little slicker. The apps are just better polished overall. And, you know, which is, I'm not saying anything new here. It's just kind of I'm finally joining the party of understanding.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah, I'm sure that I fully intend to use this as a regular device. I've already noticed where I'll like be using this app, and then I would like switch over to my iPhone to update my Fitbit, you know, calories or something like that.
Right.
And I go, the screen's so small. so that's already happening. We'll see how I handle that. But it's cool. So it's 8 gigabytes. I don't know if that's a lot or not, but it's got an SD card slot. I have no idea how much they cost. I'm thinking about getting one just for the sake of it. If anything, now I've got something for our airplane ride, not the next weekend, but the following one, right, where you're going to get a guest on the show because I won't be here.
Right. Thank you for reminding me.
No problem. You know, it'd be nice to have that SD card and be able to fill it up with a movie or two. And you know, be able to watch that while flying. That'd be pretty awesome.
And the nice part about that is you should be able to download it like, well, I guess you don't store everything in iTunes, never mind. It's going to be a pointless suggestion.
Yeah, no, I do.
You should be able to just grab stuff from iTunes, from your Mac, throw it onto an SD. SD cards are cheap. You can get like a 30-gig one, 32-gig one for like 10, 15 bucks.
Oh,
like,
cool.
They're not bad. You got
to
look around.
Can I just go to like Staples or...
Fry's, Staples, Radio Shack, places like that, Best Buy's.
Okay.
I mean, you can pay $50 for one if you want, but there's no reason to.
Maybe I'll get online and do some price comparison. I'm also thinking about maybe getting a case. I don't know. Because it can't do the magnetic latch thing, it's like it's a full-on case.
Yeah.
I don't really want that, but I might. I don't know. I haven't decided yet. And so, so I finally have joined the tablet generation. I'm
Woo-hoo!
There. I got
Welcome
my
to the
and,
future. It's pretty awesome on this side of the fence.
Yep, I'm now an Android fanboy apparently, and who knows? You know, I may be switching everything over. I doubt it, but you never know. You never know.
Go for it.
Like I say, I might root it eventually, and that would be kind of cool to be able to try out the latest version of Android and see how that works.
Definitely.
We'll see.
Cool, cool, cool. I like it. I'm a fan.
Yeah.
I'm a fan that you're
a fan.
Cool, cool.
So there's my review.
Nice. So we're clear, you have two blue stories. Does that mean those are two starty stories?
Yeah, sorry.
Cheater, man.
I messed up is really what happened.
Okay.
Because I did the actual story first. It's quick. So somebody did a survey. I don't remember who. Pew Research Center.
Pew, they're good. And,
yeah, yeah. And essentially they asked, what social media websites do you use? And they were able to compare year over year. The big news, I guess.
It's not good for... What? Go for it.
Yeah, I know. So the not big news is Facebook's huge. 71% of adults online use Facebook.
71%.
I'm guessing that's in the U.S.
Probably. Well, in the U.S. That might be worldwide. I mean, well, probably.
Yes,
online.
It is the U.S.
People? Okay. Well, never mind.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a lot.
That's a
up
ton.
Up from 67% last year. So that's almost one in four. So at that point, it's got to be people like our dad, right? Where he goes onto our mom's account now to see right. What's going on. Which I'm taking bets with Jesse on how long it'll take him before he just bites the bullet and signs up.
He can be pretty stubborn in that sort of thing. Just not do it for the sake of not doing it.
I know. And now it's a badge.
I'm gonna say, and he's now figured out a workaround so that he can experience Facebook without having to sign up for Facebook. So
that's true. That's true. So the big news, though, is that we have a new number two. I think.
Ooh.
No. We have the same number two. Yeah. So number two is LinkedIn. Shockingly. Now number three used to be Twitter. It is now Pinterest.
Really?
Yep.
Holy cow, I didn't know that.
So LinkedIn's at 22, Pinterest is at 21, and my guess is next year Pinterest will be number two because their growth rate's significantly faster than LinkedIn.
It's weird, and maybe we're biased because we don't talk about Pinterest that much, and maybe I'm biased because I don't use Pinterest that much. I'm just like... always kind of astounded that they're as big as they are, you know?
The thing you got to remember, right, is it used to be that hardware stores were, mom and pop, not very big, you know, and they were a place where men went, right?
Right.
And then you had a company that came along and said, you know what, we're going to design a hardware store that women like to shop at. Okay.
Right.
And that was Home Depot.
Yeah.
And they did okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Lowe's copied that model. I mean, even more so, I would argue, than Home Depot.
Yeah, it's funny. And that's actually one of the things I always find interesting walking into Home Depot is how many, women there are in it, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so it's just, all that to say, it's honestly, this is going to sound weird. If you can satisfy the female shopper, you could do really well,
right.
Cause they spend a lot of money in a household. They make a lot of decisions and, if they feel, it's kind of like, especially with like the hardware stores, it's kind of like, dude, the guys are going to shop wherever, they don't care as long as you got the part.
It's kind of like it's weird. It's funny. I think that's part of the reason why Reddit doesn't do as well as it does is because it's so heavily male laden. And what's weird about it is there's nothing inherent about Pinterest or Reddit that is like designed for females or designed for males. It's like just the community.
I would say that's not true. Where, like with Reddit, the design is very functional. They don't spend time making it cute and interesting. And, it's just very like, dude, here's where it is, whereas Pinterest, it's all about photos and, cute stuff. And, girls
but
are
But what I would say is, I would say this. Yes, Pinterest does spend more time on that. One of the big reasons why Reddit doesn't is because all of your different, outside of the main page, all of the different subreddits are controlled. all of the CSS, all of your style sheets are controlled by the moderators. So that's, you know, the only reason why those aren't modded to look cutesy is because the community, the guys who run the different subreddits, have decided not to make them cutesy, which I think is, and that's what my point is that they become these communities that feed on themselves, right? Pinterest would love to have men, just as many men as they do women. It just so happens that they collected women, and so all of the user-generated content tends to be cutesy stuff, and so, you know, and not to say that, you know, and this is incredibly misogynistic, so, you know, we're painting in the broad strokes, because when you paint with broad strokes, it saves lots of time. What I think is interesting is that they become these self-feeding communities that in some ways limits the growth of Reddit and expands the growth of Pinterest, you know? I don't know. It's just interesting. It's interesting that they're kind of to the point where they are what they are. I don't know if you could change them if you wanted to without ruining the community, because you'd have to change the community. This is like the battle of sexes writ large.
Yeah. And instead of heading down that hole, I'm going to move on.
Right. So Apple bought a...
Because I feel like we've already got... No. I got one more thing. I'm going to move on to the last thing that they looked at was how frequently they use it.
Okay.
Okay, so there was how many and then how frequently.
All right, that's a good question.
Believe it or not, Facebook is still in the lead. 63% of adults visit it daily.
I totally believe that.
Instagram is number two at 57, right behind them.
Well,
which I think is percentage of users.
Okay.
Yes, that's right. Okay, so... 63% of that 71% of the population. Does that make sense? Yeah. Visit Instagram is 57%. Twitter is 46, so not quite half of its users go daily. And then Pinterest is not daily at all. It's 23% visit daily. 30% go weekly, and then 45% go less often. That's probably the guys part of it. And then LinkedIn's the worst of them all, where 13% daily, which I'm like, who are those people and why?
Yeah, seriously. What is so interesting there? Employees.
Yeah, really? And then they're weekly, they're 34%, and then less often is 52%, which I guess I fall into the weekly category because once a week I go to LinkedIn to post this podcast, and then I get out.
So, funny. Yeah, I'm definitely the less than. It's funny. I'm kind of like I get into zones. It's like with Twitter, like I guess I once a week, because I try to tweet once a week at least. And I do check in pretty frequently, but I don't do it every day. Whereas like Instagram and Facebook, man, like I'll check 2-3 times a day probably. Which I think is more normal. I don't know. I'm a whatever. I get bored. ADD. But
now, see, if Feedly was in that list, that's where my once or twice an hour.
Oh yeah.
But because that's
what I was gonna say. What's interesting about that is that Reddit and Feedly are like where I actually waste my time online aren't even included on. Isn't even included. Those are not social media sites.
Yeah, I know.
But
weird.
I think it's ridiculous that Reddit's not considered a social media site, but that's a branding thing that they've done themselves. Whatever.
Well, the same with like with Tumblr or even Blogger, right? I mean, they really are. If you think about it, they're just they're categorized under blogging platform.
Right. So my turn.
Okay, go ahead. I guess.
So Apple acquired this company called Snappy Labs. They're the maker of Snappy Cam. Have you used Snappy Cam? It costs $1, so probably not.
Ha! What are you trying to say?
Humbug is what I'm saying.
Look. I have spent money on camera apps, okay? I bought Camera Plus. I even bought their in-app purchase to get the special filters. Nice. I just bought the Pebble Cam, which lets me take a picture using my – did I talk about this last week?
I think so. Yeah, you could take a shooter's picture from your – you could trigger the camera from your watch.
Yeah, it would show me a preview of the photo on my watch to make sure that I was in it. And then I could actually – then I could press the button and it would actually take the picture. So I've spent money on camera apps, okay?
Well, this one was a good one.
Basically, well, I missed it.
I know. Basically, what this dude would let you – what his app would let you do, one of the big features of it, was that it lets you take up to 30 full-resolution pictures per second.
That's a lot.
Yeah. He was basically taking it at, like, standard frame rate, like taking full-on video at full picture quality, which is pretty impressive considering the fact that the Apple camera only does, like, 10 full-resolution frames per second. And if you,
which,
you
think, I mean, who needs 10, 30? Who cares, right? I mean...
Well, it's for like action shots and stuff. Well, yeah, I mean, but so yeah, you'd say that you would say that that makes sense, but and it's like it's so that you can take action shots and like get people doing really cool stuff and like you know those perfectly timed photos where it's just a series of like 30 shots, you know, and you're picking the right one. And it's sort of like the whole the whole, you know, high-speed camera thing. So this is just what it was. It was a cool, unique app. He was selling it for a buck. He was making a bunch of money. They were making a bunch of money. But this is the thing. So Apple bought the company, and they took the app off of the App Store as soon as they did, which I think is interesting. But they basically, when they say they bought the company, they basically just hired the dude and gave him money to get his technology. Because it turns out it's like one guy who did it, and he was sitting in like one of his engineering classes where they were talking about like compression of data and pictures and stuff, and he had this like all of a sudden it hit him, and he thought, you know, I bet I could do that better. So he rewrote the compression algorithm for compressing JPEGs, and.
Okay.
Was able to like really, you know, and
it's
like,
in a different compress, like 50,000 lines.
Yeah, and did like what normally takes like 50,000 lines of code. He did it in like 10,000, which you're like, what the heck?
Dude, Wozniak report.
I know. Basically, he was like, basically, I had to write a bunch of like, you know, like a little bit of assembly and a lot of C. And you're like, what the heck, dude? He's like writing like all of his own objects and stuff. He's just going for it. And then the best part about this is like the whole the JPEG compression process is you analyze the actual bit data as it comes in, and then you compress it. But then you have to do another step. It's like it's the Harris compression or Harrison compression. I can't remember what it's called. But there's another compression step, which is essentially a, quote, lossless compression step, where you take your data and you couple it with all the rest of the metadata that's required to make a JPEG, like an actual the file extension, and then you output the file extension JPEG with all the metadata and everything included. And he was sitting there going, we could get it, like, we could improve the frame, the number of captures that you could get, because we could improve the write rate, but we couldn't get good enough. So I wanted to get it to like 30. And he goes, so I ended up having to rewrite the entire like standard compression for how you make a JPEG as well in order to get there. What the heck? And then like and like, who is this guy? And basically what he did was he embarrassed the Apple engineers. Apple engineers thought they were doing a good job. Yeah, man, we got 10 full resolution pictures per second. This guy tripled it, like just writing his own app. Doesn't have any hardware acceleration or anything, and so Apple hired him.
You know, sounds so, like he deserves it.
Yeah. How about we give you a lot of money, and then we give you a lot more money, and you go and work for us? Because that's awesome.
Well, and if I remember correctly, too, he actually had a blog post where he semi-explained how he did it, and that also got taken down almost instantly.
Yeah, there was a couple of He's, like you said, dude's in a different league. So, I don't know. I keep thinking, like,
Yeah, there's some people like me where they'll give me a promotion without a raise, and then there's some people like him where, you know what, he deserves every single penny that they give him.
Yep.
And that's I'm okay with that.
Yeah, jeez Louise, man. Talk about smart.
Man, that's
crazy.
That is pretty cool. Yeah, I just rethought it. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and what's great about it, what?
I was just like, that's what Wozniak did. It's like, oh, I just wrote it. It just made sense this way. Oh.
Right. Well, and what's great about it is that it's like, from what I'm reading, it's not even necessarily that, like, I know just enough about image compression to be dangerous, you know, and it's like, you know, JPEG's not, obviously there's a whole bunch of different compression formats. There's a whole bunch of different formats, whether it's PNG or GIF or JIF or MPEG or whatever, like all your different, you know, compression. And it's all about, you know, how do you take, effectively, you take what the output of the camera module, that's always the same, and then how do you compress it into a format that, you know, is small and doesn't lose information or loses the least amount of information. And so what it, you know, almost sounds like is, you know, it's not necessarily that he rewrote the JPEG, but he, you know, or like, you know, it's, it actually sounds like he outputs something that is different than a JPEG. It just so happens that something that can read JPEGs can also read his, and his compresses a lot faster. Which I think, I guess, is effectively the same thing, but, you know, the JPEG compression format's like a really, it's a standard format, and he had to do something different. But it, because it outputs a standard format effectively, you know, it trumps it, which you're like, it makes sense. I mean, there's other formats and better compressing, you know, faster compressions and smaller data packages than JPEG. So it's not like, what he's doing is unheard of, I guess. You know, it's just a, you know, it's one of those engineering things where you're like, wow, I can understand it. And I might have even stumbled upon that idea, but there's absolutely no way I would have been able to execute on it. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, it's cool. It's very neat. Very, very cool.
That is cool.
Yeah.
What was also cool was an article this week that created a little bit tiny dust storm. Not big, but, you know, big enough. That was talking about Google Glass, or one of the technology we all love to hate, apparently.
Apparently, I know.
So there was a Wired editor who wrote an article called My Year with Google Glass, which it was kind of funny. People came out and were like, that's kind of impossible because they didn't start handing these out until like 8 months ago. So,
you know, but if you're going to go for it, just go for it, man. It's, you know, I don't hold it against them.
Yeah. No, I'm just – and I'll read – there was two articles. So this Wired editor, Matt Honan, not to be confused with the team-related talk show guy, and then Robert Scoble, like a huge fan of Glass, wrote a reply essentially to him. So we'll cover both of them. So anyways, this guy with this Wired dude with Google Glass, he essentially was like – it's pretty cool, but in the end, I don't know if I'll ever see it taken off. You know, and so he was like, he starts off with this crazy anecdote where his wife was having a baby and, or was going to have a baby. And he was like, I got an idea. I can be in the moment. Let me just record it with Glass.
Right.
She did not want him to do that. No, right. She goes, the crazy part is she wanted him to get pictures and video.
Right.
Not using that. And he was like, yeah, but if I use Glass, then my hands will be free. And I could be watching the whole time. She was like, yeah, I don't care. and you know, so you're just like, oh, that's, and part of it is she's like, you're weird looking and I don't want to have to look at you when I'm giving birth. And you know, and he goes, that's part of it, right? Is that they just look weird. And so you know, he goes, I'm really hoping that Google makes them look cooler and actually adds design, kind of like what we talked about couple weeks back, and things like that. And yeah, so but he's like, no, it's pretty cool to use it. The thing that he also goes, you know, price point is a big deal, and you know, stuff like that. One of the things though, where was it? So we talked about the apps, right? And he was like, honestly, third party apps, dumb. He's like, you could install some apps from the get go and more over time, but I never found the first batch of third party apps particularly useful. Twitter was just too much. The New York Times breaking news alerts was okay, but they were just bad. He goes, now Google's native apps, on the other hand, he goes, those are pretty great. He goes, I love Glass for very basic rapid-fire email replies. The navigation stuff was aces. And now, and Google Now for your face is incredible. And which I was like, nice, for your face. And that's what he calls it. And I think they should call it that. He's like, the very fact that it has that ambient location awareness and can give you relevant notifications, he's like, that's pretty darn cool. And so he's like, and that's going to be amazing. He does say, though, that it kind of – he was like, it should do a better job of that kind of ambient know-where-you-are-for-location type stuff. He's like, it just you know, it almost – it can't differentiate too much between where you are. And he's like, and that would just make a huge, huge difference. Like, for example, oh, you're at a dinner party. I am not going to send you Twitter notifications right now. You don't care.
Right. That would be cool.
You know
cool.
what I mean? Yeah, knowing that kind of stuff. And so he's like, so, you know, we've got to get there next. He does say, and I thought this was super interesting, and I don't remember if I said it, but I definitely thought it, is he said that he converted over to Android because of it. And what he found was that at least right now, and I think they're coming out with an app to solve this, which – makes you wonder why after this article. But he said that iOS 7 didn't really integrate everything, which I know to be true. And he said, but Android did. And so he got an Android phone and was carrying that around in his pocket in yeah. addition to his iPhone. And then eventually he was like, dude, this is dumb. I should just switch over to Android. And so he did. You know, and so he's like, so that got me to switch, right? That's a switcher thing. Of course, he did say he overall hates his phone as a result of it. Well, no. He hates phones in general because he's like, these phones, they separate it from our lives and they take us away from what's going on and our hands are busy. And he's like, they're just – this idea of it getting out of the way is just amazing. And so – he was like, he found himself asking, you know, can adding a device actually make you more present? Or over time, will it just become another distraction? And, you know, something else that you can just stare off into the distance from. He's like, you know, he doesn't know yet. But yeah, so, you know, his whole thing was, yeah, I don't know. I don't think it'll happen. And then Robert Scoble, he replies back with a sensational headline of Google Glass is doomed. Which are just like, yes. Which he goes, first, I love headlines that stretch the truth a bit, which is then he gets his dig into him about it not actually being a year. So right, you're like, yeah. Oh, nice. So he says he has a couple observations since using it. Number one, he goes, nearly everybody wants to try it. He's like, they got us to pay $1,500 to be their PR agent. It was brilliant. And he says that people are often pretty nice about it. And he was frustrated that they don't have a lot of good APIs so that other developers can really start making some stuff, which is why they don't work very well. He's like, and there are things like battery life and even design that they need to change. And he said the price is going to matter a lot. How about this for the scuttlebutt? He goes, I'm hearing they won't be able to get it under $500 for 2014.
Yeah, and unlike Apple, that doesn't mean that it's actually going to, you know, that's probably true.
Yeah, so his whole thing, he goes, which means it's doomed because you can't hit that price point. And yeah. He goes, eventually they'll get under $300. And when they do, yeah, they're going to sell a ton, just a truckload of them, right? Which, you know, if it's really awesome for $300 and my student loans are paid off, I might be interested in it, you know, at that much.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and he also says, like, you know, the camera really isn't that scary once people understand how it works. It's like, it's okay. And then apparently there's some eye sensor thing that it looks back on your own eye that nobody knows what that is and what that's doing. And he's like, that's the thing. I'm like, what is that all about? I don't even know. And, yeah, he's also just like, I wish that they were, I love this. He's like, do you love yours? He's like, yeah, I do. But I'm frustrated at the speed at which they're iterating on these. Which I'm like, dude, you've had it for 8 months. Like, how fast should they be iterating on this? I don't.
Well, I mean, you know, if you're an Android, you know, fan, you're used to, you know, every couple of months the newer, you know, best model comes out.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
You're not used to the Apple product cycle.
Yeah, so he says the problem is really just expectations are way too high, and which is why it will, no matter what, it'll honestly seem like a failure in 2014. Furthermore, if it comes out. If it becomes publicly available at the same time as Apple's iWatch comes out, it will definitely be compared with each other, even though they're genuinely two different types of hardware.
Right.
And Apple's going to win that. Right. So it'll be considered a failure.
I'm still willing to bet that the Apple Watch will be more expensive than the Google Glass, and I'll bet people will consider the Apple Watch a success and the Google Glass a failure.
I could see that. He also said the other problem that they're going to run into, besides a high price, is like they actually need to be fitted to hit you properly, and you need to be trained on how to use them. I remember talking with David. He was like, yeah, it was crazy. He's like, I spent hours trying to figure stuff out. He's like, there's zero documentation. He's like, I'm just going on random forums. I'm like, okay, I hope this doesn't brick it, you know, and trying to load stuff. He's like, it is not there yet at all. I hear they're coming out with an app store, which will help enough. But they just need a better API.
This doesn't break it. That's awesome.
yeah. He says like right now the UI cannot handle a lot of apps. And so he's like, so you can't put 300 apps on there like you can with a phone. He's like, I don't know how they're going to handle that, but, they need to figure that one out as well. Again, he says the battery life needs to be fixed. I guess if he does a live video broadcast, the battery lasts only 45 minutes, and it gets really hot. Yeah, so he's like, so that's got to be figured out. He says that, which I was like, I don't even know you could do this. He says photo workflow is bad. Apparently, you can't really edit them on it. No. I remember what he was saying, is that he'll take a bunch of photos, and then he'll want to edit the one or pick the one that's the best to share online. He goes, but it doesn't sync with your phone unless you're on Wi-Fi. He's like, and that's dumb. He's like, that should be like instantaneously start sending that bad boy to my phone so that I can pull it up, choose the best one, maybe edit it, and then share it. They don't let you do that.
That'll change. I mean, that'll come. You know,
hopefully. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you may not even be this generation. It might be two generations from now, but that'll come. I mean, that's just that's one of those ones where you sit there and go, I can see why you'd say that's annoying now, but it's not like that's going to be that way forever.
I took a – I did not, I guess. David took a photo of me during jiu-jitsu. It looked awesome. I mean, I was like
– I'm going to learn jiu-jitsu.
Yes, that's right. Thank you. The picture looked – I mean, the quality was – great. I mean, it was a well-lit room. I wasn't moving, all that stuff. But it was, you know, it was good. It looked awesome and menacing. It was fantastic. He also, so his thing was, he goes, there's no contextual filtering. Okay, so for example, he goes, when I'm standing on stage, why does Glass give me tweets? Why can't it recognize that I'm at a conference, at least, and show me only tweets about that conference, hashtag style? He goes, but it can't. Because this contextual OS isn't done and probably won't be done until 2015. Google Glass desperately needs these contextual signals to know when to show you appropriate stuff. Skiing, only show me stuff about the mountain I'm on. In a meeting, do something like the mind meld does and show me stuff about what we're talking about. Shopping, show me coupons and to-do lists. But today it's pretty stupid context-wise. It makes the experience of using it not great.
That seems like an important one to get on. you know.
Yeah, which, you know, it sounds like they are working on it. They just, you know, it's not easy. And then he says the Gruber problem, which I'm going to guess he's referring to, was it Dan Gruber? John Gruber?
Oh, what's I don't know. First
the Apple dude, Darien Fireball guy. He says that I think I figured out
John Gruber.
John, sorry. Okay. Yeah, he says oh yeah, he says most are disappointed in themselves and their lack of ability to put their phones down. He goes, they fear that if we're going with glass that they would totally lose themselves to their mobile addictions. He goes, and they're right to be scared of that. If glass actually worked the way I'm dreaming of, it would be even more addicting to our online world than he would be even more addicted than he is today. It's like, and so they're, you know, they're scared of losing their humanness. I'm like, whoa, that's a little intense. Yeah. So he's saying, like, you know, they're not going to, you know, they're going to come out with it this year. He goes, but it's probably going to be like $600, and it's going to look dorky, and expectations are just going to be way too high for that. He goes, but by 2020, he goes, I'm quite convinced that this will be a big deal, and there will be lots of competitors by then. So,
yeah, you know, and you know,
and they got deep enough pockets, they'll keep iterating. I mean, they'll do exactly like we said. They'll do exactly like they did with Android for this, right? Where they'll be like, yeah, well. Whatever, we'll keep trying. We'll keep moving. They believe in it. They obviously think it's fun, and yeah.
Yeah, you know, yeah. It's clearly the next Android equivalent project for them. I mean, it's just unquestionable. One of the things that I saw an article that kind of this is awesome, and because this. Another article. Even Google employees are giving up on Google Glass. So this is another naysayer article about why it's terrible. So this was this is Jay Yarrow. Here's a bad sign for Google's still nascent glasses project from Glass Evangelist. This is from Scrover's article. I'm also worried at a new trend. I rarely see Google employees wearing theirs anymore. Most say, I just don't like advertising that I work for Google. I understand that. Quite a few people I assume I work for Google when they see me with mine. I just hope it doesn't mean that Google's average employee won't support it. That is really what killed the Tap PC efforts inside Microsoft until Apple forced them to react due to the popularity of iPad, which seems a little generous to the awesomeness of the Microsoft tablet projects. Not sure that it was lack of employee enthusiasm that made them unpopular. I think it was the fact that there was like no use case that made sense because they weighed too much and they weren't, you know, they're too overloaded. But the question that this author asks is, if Google employees aren't willing to be trailblazers, then who will? Basically, she's advocating that
I'll do it for free, too.
I know. You really require somebody to be your mavens, as it were, your hardcore fans. And, you know, if you can't rely on the tribalism of your own corporation to support projects, can you really – you know, I mean, these are people that have them, that own them and use them, and they don't use them. You know, it's funny. I think about the fact that, like, you know, where we live, man, you, like, I remember when the iPhone 4 – came out, and I got to see white iPhones. If you remember, this is like when they were glass front and back the first time, and I like only the black ones for like 8 months. I remember seeing white ones early because, you know, so many people had them, and like, and it just was one of those things where it was like, you know, people got into it, and like they found back channels to be able to get, you know, either the scrap white glass that they weren't actually building into phones, and they take them and they take their black iPhone and like swap out for the white glass, or they have like the production run
phones that weren't done yet, and Apple employees were able to take them and buy them for themselves, and they were using them and maybe selling them.
Nice.
and I just sit there and I go, like, you know, where I live in the Silicon Valley, you know, we see, like, if you're going to see it in the wild, you see it here first. You know, we saw Google Glass, like, the, you know, like weeks after the product launched, we saw our first sighting of it. You know, and in the wild, I don't see them at all anywhere, which I think is really interesting. And I realize it's a very small group of people that actually paid the $1,500 for it, but Google itself has a huge, like, number of people that are, like, beta testers that are supposed to be using them and wearing them all over the place and out and about with them. And maybe I hang out with the wrong group, but I don't hang out with the wrong group. People just aren't using them. And, you know, it's,
well,
and,
do you know people who have them and choose not to wear them?
See, no, that's – I don't.
Okay.
You
just met the right crowd or something like that, right? Okay, right. I understand.
I mean, it's mostly most of my friends who don't own them, because I've you know, especially in the last, like, 2 months, I've had, like, oh God, there's probably 10 of us that have all gotten offers that are, we're all like, we're just broke. We do it, but we're broke. We don't have $1,500. Sorry. And so it's like, it's one of those things where, you know, it's getting around, and that's the other thing. I feel like 10 months ago, every single one of us would have found $1,500. I would have found $1,500. I had $1,500, and I decided not to do it. And I think 8 months ago, I might have, you know, decided to do it. And
put your Olympic hopes on pause, be like, oh, I'll get
exactly worth it. Especially 8 months ago, before I bought my car, man. Whatever, go for it. You know, and so I shrug my shoulders at this whole thing, and I'm like, you know, I get the feeling that this project of theirs is, you know, is right now the current phase is really running low on steam. That being said, nothing has changed about the idea of heads-up display and the utility of it and the future of it. It's obviously going to be a huge part of our lives. It'll be as obvious as omnipresent, you know, touchscreens and you know, foldable paper, you know, foldable, movable paper. Like, it's one of those things where you sit there and you go, like, anywhere where, you know, I don't know, because it's, you know, the only literally in my mind, the only thing that could kill the idea of heads up display are projectors embedded in everything. That's just sort of like, you know, projected in your eyes. But that, at some point, we'd have, you know, a heads up display for all sorts of things. Obviously. I mean, like, and the crazy part to me is that, like, right now it's illegal to do it while you drive. Where you sit there and you go, I think eventually it'll be a requirement while you drive, because it. You know, you'll be able to get more information and more contextual information. And it just has to be contextually aware to turn off Twitter while you're driving. But, like, the idea that, you know, certain information – so I don't know. It's weird. I think what we are seeing is that the current phase of Google Glass has run out of most of its steam. And it's honestly probably a good thing that the next phase is going to be required is still going to be too expensive, because I feel like if you got one in the hands of everyone, but they weren't very cool or very useful or they were difficult to use, you'd actually run into an inverse PR problem where too many people would be able to get to use it and say, this is stupid, it's a piece of junk, I don't want one, and they'd throw it aside. Whereas at $1,500, you get the people who are willing to, you know, like David Perry, who are willing to put up with hours of, you know, searching on forums. And at $500, $600, you actually have the same or a similar mentality. It's people who are willing to – they're making a big investment, so they're going to put the time in to figure out how to use it. They're your next phase. I think it's almost a good thing that it's going to be too expensive for everybody to own one, because if everybody could own one and there was a huge marketing push and everybody did own one and, you know, a lot of the things that really are required to make it an awesome product, like better battery life, you know, better syncing, better UI.
whatever. I mean, they made the Chromebooks pretty affordable, and those sales started off slow, and apparently they're ticking up pretty fast this year. So
because I think the Chromebook is getting better. I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, there are more apps.
I'm just saying. It sounds like they could both work. They're clearly doing both.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I guess.
I suppose. All right, man. What's going on with Microsoft? What's their problem?
Oh, dude, it's awful. Basically, they're having like an exodus of employees. It's kind of crazy right now.
Really?
Yeah, they're. It's and not just employees, sorry, but executives in more importantly, and they are like, people are either leaving or getting fired in mass. If you were involved with Windows 8,
and rightly so.
Yeah, and it's like
I just had another friend who installed Windows 8. He got a new laptop and it has Windows 8. He's like, "This is the most frustrating thing I've ever used." He goes, "I don't get it."
I couldn't believe it. I was at our parents' house this evening actually, and it was my first time actually sitting down in a Windows 8.1 computer.
Oh yeah.
Sat down, and I went, "How do I get to the desktop? I don't know how to get to the desktop anymore." And my mom was like, "Oh, you just go over here and you click on this." And I was like, "I can't." I realized that they tried to fix it and make it better by going to 8.1. It was supposed to be the savior of it. But
yeah.
They changed enough of the UI that I was like, "Okay, what do I do now?" I actually learned 8.0 and you went and changed it on me enough where it went, you're like, whatever. I guess I had to do that. But basically, so two of the dudes that like were most responsible for revamping Vista into Windows 7, John Devan and Grant George, they left the company earlier this week. Yay! Julie Larson Green and Jensen Harris, whom may blame or credit with the Office ribbon on Windows Tinker toy tiles, have found new homes buried deep in corporate nowhere land.
I originally thought the ribbons were pretty dumb, but I don't know. They're okay. They're okay.
Yeah. I
would say they are better than the old menu system.
But the important part here is that the people that are responsible for them are no longer there.
Yeah,
so if you like
them,
they've left. It's too bad. You know, that.
All right.
And it's funny. You know, a lot of people hated the ribbons because they were new. And one of the things that Microsoft does a terrible job with is transitioning, people.
Oh, my gosh. There is no transition.
Well, there is no transition.
Figure it out.
Yeah, and it's the whole idea of intuitive versus familiar, and a lot of people confuse the two. And they said the ribbons aren't intuitive. And like, it's not that they're not intuitive, it's that they're not familiar. They're not any more intuitive or less intuitive than the last version, just the last version was familiar. Whereas like the whole reason why you put transitions in, like, you know, and do all that graphically intense stuff is because that makes it intuitive. And that being besides the point, you're losing a bunch of execs.
Yeah.
Steve Sinofsky, who is one of the former Windows chief, he's gone. Antoine Lebond, of the original Office 95 to 2007, Windows 7, 8, Inner Circle, he's gone. And basically what they're going through is this like big list of of people who are like were important to the company, important to these products, and they've all left. I thought this was interesting. Who is this? It's Devan was Sinofsky's boss for many years. Most telling is this reminiscence from Sinofsky's as told in GeekWire. Back in the early 1990s, the use of garbage collection was more theoretical than practical. It is used broadly today in .NET scripting languages, but I was really into it having just come from graduate school. I went to see John and convince him of the virtues of using garbage collection in Excel, and we explored using it first in C++ tools. He was open-minded and then patiently showed me the tiny number of bugs in Excel that were rooted in memory management problems, and also showed me just how memory efficient Excel was all due to the amazing coding engineering the team did. And once I learned the limits of theory, the practical engineering John exhibited, as well as his patience and openness to the ideas from the new guy, and you know, just talking about talking about this dude who was really important to what was going on at Microsoft, because he's not just he doesn't just understand the new stuff, but he understands the practicality of the engineering, what they've done, and why that's all important. I mean, that's, you know, it's like, you know, good engineering is incredibly valuable. And one of the things that I've always said about Microsoft is that, you know, they've got bad managers but great engineers. They got really, really great data scientists, computer scientists, great engineers, and you know, they come out with these really amazing products that just don't really find their way, you know, into usability, or they're thrust upon the population or forced upon, and it's just uncomfortable. And it's like, their problem isn't bad products, it's in bad engineering, it's bad everything else currently. And basically what's happening is all the great engineers are leaving. And you're like, oh, this is not good. It's not good for Microsoft at all. And on top of that, what's fascinating is, another article that I read that kind of talking about Windows 8.1 in 2014. Basically, what they said was, the long and short of this article is, as you know, trying to figure out, like, what's the problem with Windows 8.1? Why isn't it being uptake? Especially because a lot of there's a strong fan base, just like there was for Vista. But you know, people arguing that, you know, once you get used to it, it's actually pretty awesome. It's got a lot of new intuitive, or it's got a lot of new features that are great and really useful and worth the time. So why isn't it catching on? And this guy says, well, there's a really it's not about different feature sets. It's not about how you market it. It's the fundamental issue of, you know, Microsoft wanted to build a operating system that was both a, you know, a tablet, good for tablets, good for desktops. It was everything that everybody needed. It wasn't just, quote unquote, a toy. It allowed you to play and to work, just like all Windows. And basically what this guy is arguing, and I tend to agree with this, is that people are realizing they don't need the complexity of a full-blown operating system. You know, and he goes, it's just one of those things where people are sitting there going, you know, I don't need all the Windows. It's the reason why the Chromebooks are taking off. It's the reason why people rely more and more on their smartphones. It's the reason why the iPads sell as well as they do. It's because people just don't need a full-blown operating system. And it's funny. It's like I have to remind myself to sit down at my Mac, especially now that I have the Apple TV. Oh, my goodness. I have to remind myself to sit down on my Mac and produce, because that is the absolutely only thing that I do on my Mac. I don't goof around on my Mac at all. It is a work tool.
Work tool, huh? I know. You should think about investing in some capital there to really get some work done.
I know. So I can get it done quickly.
Yeah.
I can't afford $1,500 for Google Glass, but I can definitely afford the $4,500 for the model.
That's why banks invented personal loans and credit cards.
You know, don't tempt me, James. Don't tempt me. I'm in a goofy mood.
So I've been working on this finance class way too long, and I have this cool section actually where I talk about the history of the credit card and how it all happened. It's actually a relatively recent invention, but anyways, it's cool little credit cards, man.
I know, man. It's great. This stuff
what
is.
What was that line in The Matrix? You know, where that guy? I think it was Reloaded, where he's like quintessentially your best attribute and your worst.
Hope is the quintessential human emotion. It's the source of your greatest strength and your biggest weakness.
Yeah. It's kind of like that.
Yeah, I get it. But not hope, credit. You see the problem is that credit just like turns on credit lights up the same like, you know, neurons in me that sugar does. Where it's like I have one cookie and then I have another 37 cookies. I can go
weeks without a cookie. I had that first cookie, and I can't stop. Rest of the day is done. It's whatever, you know. And same with credit, man. You give me a credit card, I survive without a credit card just fine. No problem. Never need one. Never use one because I don't have one. You give me one, I will spend every cent on it before the end of the month and be like, I don't have money for this. Why did I do that? That was stupid. I don't know what to do now. It's awful. There's something wrong with my brain. That being said,
credit cards can be good, man. I've got like 40,000 points right now on my rewards card. I don't know what to do with it.
You know, that's great. We are not talking about credit right now. We are talking about OS X and Windows. But that, I guess that's the bigger point here, right?
Yeah.
I know. Well, I guess that's the bigger point here is that I think OS X suffers from the same problems that Windows does, except OS X has always positioned itself as an expensive tool and more of a capital investment in something that's going to last longer. And so I think the reason why you don't see the same dramatic, you know, plunge off the sales cliff that you're seeing in, you know, if as much of a, you know, it's not like a hard, you know, they still sell a ton of Windows machines. But the reason why you're seeing the, you know, sales decline the way they are, and you're not seeing the same dramatic decline in OS X, is just the nature of the type of, you know, Macs that you sell. But it's the same fundamental issue of we don't need full-blown operating systems anymore. It's just not necessary for most people most of the time. And so, you know, or if you need it, you're going to buy it once and you're just going to hold on to it for, you know, a long time. And then the best part about it is that you build Chrome, and Google wants Chrome to work just as well on your, you know, on your PC as it does on a Chromebook, as it does on Android. So, you know, if most of my goofing off time is spent on Chrome, you know, and then the only time that you really need, you know, a high-powered computer for is for playing video games. And they're like, go buy an Xbox, you know, One or PlayStation 4 or a Steam machine. And so this all comes back to, you know, Microsoft is having, like, they're getting hit on two fronts right now. It's like they're suffering from a serious traumatic brain drain. And a real brain drain, and at the same time, like, their flagship product is suffering from just a lack of apathy. It's not that it's bad or good. It doesn't matter. It's just not necessary, which
that could be a problem.
Is a different thing and bad in a really troublesome way. You know, and it's funny.
So the important question is, do you think that they can recover? Do you think this new CEO can come in, whoever it is, can come in and right the ship?
I think they have a product that actually could really help save them already selling in Windows 8 or Windows Phone 8. I think it's a good product, and I think that they just need to realize that that is what RT should have been, and that's what most Surfaces should be running, is some blown-up version of Windows Phone 8, Windows Mobile 8, you know. Call it something good. Come up with a better name, man. They come up with as good a name as HP. But, you know.
Dude, the Slate, man. That's a cool name.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's funny. You know, it's like I make fun of Windows Mobile 8, but, you know, Apple's not necessarily any better. The iPad mini with Retina display, 64 gigs Wi-Fi only, is the title of the product that I would buy today if I were going to go and buy one. You know, it's like ridiculous. So, you know, I don't know. But that's where they're at.
All right.
Bad news, man.
And so then, it sounds like 4K is the future, huh?
Heck yeah. So Google announced on day after New Year's, appropriate use of apostrophes, on Thursday, that they are going to be doing, they're going to be streaming 4K through YouTube, which is awesome. More credibility to the fact that this is the year of 4K, and everybody's going to be making a big deal about it. Of course, Google wants to use their proprietary their open source proprietary codec, the codec that they make, VP9, and unlike VP8, where it was competing against the one that Apple was behind, which was H.264,
whatever it was.
254 or something.
Yeah. That one, and they lost hardcore. VP8 got very little adoption. Google's out early with VP9 because it supports 4K, and they got a bunch of hardware partners that are going to do hardware acceleration to run VP9, which at 4K is kind of necessary. Most TVs and stuff don't, or monitors, you know, if there's not hardware acceleration, they don't run fast enough to do the decompression in a virtual machine. So it's important.
I saw on Lifehacker, was it last week or 2 weeks ago? They had a 4K television, or they were talking about a 4K television that was on sale on Amazon, and it was only $2,500.
What?
And they're like, yeah, it's a crazy deal, man. Check it out. Yeah, I was like, wow, that's ridiculous. Yeah, and it was 4K.
Samsung?
You could buy a really nice, it was like a 60-inch HD television for $900. But
yeah, man, which, that's crazy.
That one, I mean, it was like Samsung, you know, like normal name brand stuff, not some off brand.
Dude, those operative. AOC, man, that's the way to go, dude. They're awesome.
What does that stand for? Is that a company?
It's a company, yeah. But they do the panels for like a bunch of different companies. They're kind of like Panasonic in that they make just the LCD panels, and then occasionally they make their own model of like actual branded monitor, and they're super cheap because they make the panels themselves. But they're good. I like them. I have an AOC and an LG. But what was I going to say about this? Dude, Samsung, they just announced they've got an Ultra HD, which I think is 4K, but they call it Ultra HD TV, 110 inches.
Wow.
Yeah. I want one like crazy. Except this one's a little bit outside of my price range, unlike the Mac Pro. This one costs $150,000.
Oh, that's it, huh?
Mostly being sold to like your Arabian sheiks, your oil barons of the Middle East. Because it costs $150,000.
Why would you ever pay that? I know that, but why would anybody ever buy it? This just doesn't make any sense to me.
Because you're one of the top 10 richest men in the world, and
but I'd like to think that you became one of those men by being smart with your money.
No, they didn't. They're oil barons. They're princes and
sheiks.
Kings.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, I mean they're literally born into royalty, so they have the rights.
They
to
are paying
the energy.
Samsung's R&D. Good job.
That's
guys.
That's precisely what it is, actually. Yeah, they're the guys that it's crazy when you talk about like the super rich, because obviously like Bill's Gates, what's the one Mexican dude's name?
Carlos Slim.
Yeah, Carlos Slim.
Who's actually
like,
super frugal, by the way.
I believe
he's,
it. Well,
he's lived in the same 4-bedroom house for the last 30 years.
That's awesome. Man,
Warren Buffett.
Yeah, Warren Buffett. So like your top like 3 billionaires, they always talk about how like rich they are, the 3 richest men on earth. The only reason they're the 3 richest men on earth is because they disclose what they actually own. There's at least 100 guys way more wealthy, insanely wealthier than them, because they basically own like entire oil fields, and they just don't disclose how much money they have because they're kings and princes of countries, and for geopolitical reasons, and
I've never actually thought
political.
About that.
Yeah, they're insanely rich. They're like where Bill Gates is like, you know, 60 billions. They're like 500 billion. They're approaching trillionaires. They're just
you would think that would be mentioned somewhere in, but maybe not.
Every once in a while it comes up. It's like Mubarak. Mubarak was way richer than Bill Gates when you actually took all of his assets together. But they just, you know, it's hard to really figure out what his assets are, you know. As the dictator of Egypt. It's like, what are you supposed to do? So, yeah, those are the guys that buy those kinds of products, not Bill Gates. But, yeah, good times.
So I'm going to go first.
Go for it.
You can wrap it up. I just want to apologize.
It's too late to apologize.
I want to apologize on behalf of Evan Spiegel, because he refuses to.
Okay.
Evan Spiegel, the $3 billion boy. Remember him?
Yeah.
He is the CEO of Snapchat. This guy who the news was that a whole bunch of phone numbers and usernames got stolen because there was some sort of issue with their security, and they were warned about it, and they totally ignored them. And then essentially we're like, you know, you didn't listen, so we're going to post it online or part of the numbers, whatever. You could go online and you could look up your own number or your name or something like that. I don't remember. I didn't do it.
I did.
And
all you could do is
you
could
see if were you on there?
You could see if your number was available. Nope, mine wasn't.
Good job. Good job. I know our dad, where like Snapchat is like the first social network he's ever signed up for, was super concerned. He was like, not only did he email the article, but he like called me too. I was like, is this okay? I'm like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. What are they going to do with your phone number?
But we, part of it, right? That's it too. But this kind of feeds back, I mean, perfectly with what we were talking about. Where it was like, are they mature enough to handle it? He did this interview. I want to see if I can play it. Hopefully it'll actually not buffer. We'll see here. It might, because I know I'm rocking high speeds right now. Whoops. No, actually play.
Come on. Get it together.
Come on. Oh, it may not. Oh, wait.
An anonymous hacker or group of hackers posted the personal information on a website called SnapchatDB that has since been taken down. Now Spiegel is trying to reassure Snapchat's users who, according to the company, send 350 million images a day.
Local or technology businesses in general are susceptible to hacking, and that's why you have to work really, really, really hard, you know, with law enforcement, with security experts, you know, internal and external groups to make sure you're paying attention and, you know, addressing security concerns.
But Spiegel played down the fact that Snapchat had been warned by a security firm that the site was vulnerable just days before the hack.
You know, I believe, you know, at the time we thought we had done enough. But I think in a business like this, in a business that's moving so quickly, if you spend your time looking backwards, you're just going to kill yourself.
Spiegel also points out that no pictures or videos were compromised.
The key is striking a balance, you know, between providing the utility of a friend service and preventing abuse.
And there you go. Yeah, just doesn't really want to apologize for it. And, I mean, it's just I honestly listen to that and I watch him and I just kind of want to slap him. I'd be like, really? That's your answer? Come on. You know,
I love that.
Companies.
You know what my favorite part about that, honestly, and this is I'm you know, piggyback on what you're saying, was the, you know, if you spend time looking back, you'll just want to, you know, kill yourself. Yeah. Yeah. That is why we're angry. It's because we're looking back to yesterday, to when you compromised all of our data, you jerk.
Yeah. No, it really is.
I hate to be this way. I mean, I hate to be this way, and I hate to keep, you know, coming back to this, but it's Facebook has never had this problem. You know,
well, Facebook has done stuff, and I mean, it was funny. They've actually said, this was actually in Gawker, you know, Valley Wag, but you know, but they were like, dude, it's totally okay to say I'm sorry. They're like, do you know how many times Mark Zuckerberg has had to admit that he's messed up with something on Facebook? Like, it's okay. And then they give a little bit more of his quote. And then they sit there and say, you know what? Here's what needs to happen. Either one, Snapchat CEO Evan Spiegel must be fired. Or two, Snapchat CEO Evan Spiegel must fire whoever is advising him not to apologize for this mess. And then they're like, the first absolutely won't happen. And number two won't solve the real problem. Evan Spiegel. You go, it's one thing to play steely sociopath with your best friend during a deposition, but you can't treat millions of app users like some frat friend you messed over at Stanford. And, you know, it's like, dude, it's so true. Which, by the way, on the sociopath one, there's a link to his deposition video.
Yeah.
And it's this guy. I would play it, but it's like 5 minutes long, and 4 minutes and 30 seconds of it is silence. And,
go to furloughrose.com and check it out.
Yeah. But it's this the guy asks him, he asks him some question about it, and then he asks him, do you have any regrets in how you handled the situation with your roommate, essentially?
Yeah.
Right? And I mean, like, I kid you not, there's like a 2 minute pause of him like thinking of his answer. You know? I mean, you're just like, wait, are you seriously? Just, you know, it reeks of liar so bad. Like, okay, wait, let me come up with my answer real quick. It's horrible. But ultimately he's like, you know what I regret? I regret opening up my home to him. I regret giving him food and letting him work on this amazing project. That's what I regret doing. I know. You're like, oh. And it was funny. The interviewer goes, really? Is that your answer for reals?
And this is against the dude who actually came up with the ghost like drawing, right?
Yeah. Who at first they played off as, oh no, he was never a part of it. He never lived in our house, to which all of the emails said completely opposite.
It's ludicrous. It's absolutely, I mean, the dude is a train wreck. I mean, and this is the biggest problem that they run into, is that it's, you know, it was an engineering issue. It was a, you know, the security firm came to them and said, you have a problem with your database. Fix it. We'll give you a couple of days to fix it. It needs to be fixed right now before anybody else finds it. And because what they want, because the security firm is like, you either get credit for finding it and fixing it, or somebody else does. And that's what they're like. You know, they're fighting against the clock. So they're going, we'll give you enough time to deal with it, and then we're taking credit for it. Because that's where their value proposition is. And basically, you know, the guys at Snapchat didn't fix it. They're like, what the heck were you doing? Like, either you decided that it wasn't a valuable enough target and it was fine that you didn't fix it, or you didn't know how to fix it. And the thing is that I keep coming back with Snapchat, I don't think they have a good enough technology team there. They just, every time you see like little flaws open up and more when security teams pull apart Snapchat, you just like, really? That was your guys' solution to this problem? You know, I don't know. It just, they do not strike me as a company that had anything but one really lucky idea and you know, one brilliant idea that they stumbled upon completely on accident. And they probably beat the one guy out that actually understood why it was a brilliant idea. You know,
I'll be honest, man. There is a part of me that just wants to watch this thing completely implode on itself.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, to have just that classic, they passed on $3 billion for an app, like you said, that has bugs, has a lot of improvements. They probably don't have another thing inside of them. They definitely don't have a revenue model yet. And they passed on it. And I could totally see it where they implode. And I would still be upset if they got bought for like $100 million. But you know what I mean? I just love it to be like, no, sorry, you had your opportunity and you missed it. The world is on. There's a part of me that would just love to watch that. And it's purely because of leadership, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You just put that in contrast with Google, right? Where you had these two engineers who were brilliant by all measures, and, you know, which is different in this situation, and smart enough to realize that they weren't ready to run a company.
Yep.
And to actually listen to advisors and to bring in somebody who, you know, knew what they were doing. They tried to sell their algorithm and their, you know, what they came up with before, and then no one wanted to buy it, right? I mean, a totally different situation, but it's just something where you look at it and go, look, these are smart guys. They get it. And yeah, they were going to be a success. It was just, was it Google Search? Was it something else? You know, who knows? And, you know, and that's why you look at what they're doing with Google Glass and you go, yeah, they're going to be a success. That's how they work. They're smart. They figured out they put themselves in a position to be successful. And you're going to watch the same thing with the driverless cars and a whole bunch of other things that they're working on. You know, they just, it just huge contrast. Huge contrast.
And he shrugged your shoulders at Spiegel, and he's just like, I bet if you were to talk to him, he thinks he's smarter than all of them.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. And it's just, it's a shame, because he gets people like us where we root against him.
Yeah.
You know, and the second you run into a problem, we're not going to give him excuses. And I think this way, the service isn't that great, where I'm going to stick it out no matter what.
It's funny. I feel myself slowing down with Snapchat. I still get snaps from people, and I watch them and I appreciate them. They're cool, but I don't send out snaps anymore, and not for any particular reason. It's just whatever. It's fine. It's cool. But I don't think about it. I already run into the permanence issue of. I get why the non-permanence is cool, but it's like anything that actually this is what I love. I love these. When you get a really cool picture from somebody, a really cool snap, and you're like, that is really cool. And then I flip over to Instagram to see what's going on Instagram, and they posted the exact same picture to Instagram.
It's like, I think I did that recently.
Perfect.
Actually.
Exactly. Yeah, and you just sit there and you go, that's...
Well, so I'll be honest. What happened with that one, so like I did the pizza because that was awesome.
Yeah.
It tasted amazing. The only reason why I went to Snapchat was because of our dad.
Yep.
Because I was like, dude, I want this around forever because it's amazing. Everyone else on my family is on Instagram, but I know that he would want to see it and would appreciate it. Normally, I would just text it to him, but what the heck, I'll Snapchat it over.
But I see a lot of people making the – and so basically what you're left with, the only thing that you're left with Snapchat is like, you know, really, really trivial pictures and, you know, and playing with people, you know, just like goofing off with people and texting back and forth in a chatty sort of way, which – You know, I don't have any reason to suspect that Snapchat has any permanence over, I don't know, texting or whatever the next, you know, service is that.
Well, it was like that other one we talked about, right, where we're talking about the context, right, where you can fill up the screen with a picture and text as much and put as much text as you want. No limit. Don't worry about it.
Right. And there's the whole feedback thing of I can't give any feedback to people on Snapchat without committing to a complete other snap where all I'm being like, that's really cool, which is just stupid. I just can't, I used to do that. I was just like, this is so dumb. I can't do it anymore. And I realized that like, I'm not necessarily the greatest thermometer for what's cool and what's useful. But when I really try to, when I watch, what I do really try to do is watch my friends' usage. And I don't think Instagram's got anything going for it. I don't think it has legs at all. And from the top of the company to the product they're offering, it's a really clever idea. It really is. And I think somebody will buy it, but I think it's way better as part of another service. I think it's way better as part of Instagram and not its own app. And that's what it comes down to. You know, I just don't, part of Twitter, part of Vine, part of something else. It just doesn't make sense on its own as this own like thing. And the simple fact of the matter is it's like, well, I wanted last week to talk about an article about the idea of the impermanent internet. You know, the internet up to this point has been really awesome because it's permanent. You know, it's like, you know, you've got these huge histories and these huge databases and all this stuff. And Instagram's that first, like, you know, real product where we're like, it's the exact opposite. It's impermanent. And it's exciting because it's impermanent. But not really because it's still stored on your phone. And although you don't have access to it, a lot of people have access to it. Because you know, it's like you sit there and you go, what do we hate about Facebook and our whole privacy thing? It's not that it's permanent for us. It's that it's permanent for somebody. And so, with Snapchat, the pictures are not permanent for us, but they're permanent for everybody that has any access to, you know, the file hierarchy of any phone that you sent it to. And if you sent it to somebody with an Android phone, you can get it just from a PC. You just go into the file hierarchy, you know, you plug it in and you can look for it. You can find it. Super easy. They're there. You just change the file extension name and you can open up the pictures again. You know, and so it's like even the one thing that it actually offers that's uniquely culturally different, even that isn't real. And it's just smoke and mirrors. And I shrug my shoulders and I go, like, it offers nothing that's real or new. And a lot of that is the fault of their engineers and their developers. But I don't know. The more and more I go, the more and more I'm just like, obviously my attitude towards Snapchat is souring at a relatively quick pace.
Yeah, seriously.
And it's like, although my information wasn't compromised, it makes me pretty nervous about it, that my information's there. Because I have no reason to suspect that they haven't done something incredibly retarded, like, you know, storing all of your passwords in simple text, or in plain text, why would they do any sort of, you know, I guess they probably have enough people that have actually, like, gone through and said, you can't store this in plain text. You have to do this as, you know, encrypted. But, you know, Reddit got hit by that after being around for, like, 4 years, and they were still storing everything in plain text. You're like, you guys have got, like, 100 million users. How can you possibly be doing that? But I don't know. I don't know.
By the way, we had a comment here from Christy E.
What's up, Christy E?
Decided to give a friendly reminder that you can actually send private pictures to Instagram now.
It's true. So, they just don't delete themselves automatically. And then it's funny, I haven't actually done it yet.
I think I sent you one when it first came out.
Yeah. You want to know why I don't do it? And it's simple. There's this other really cool app that I discovered. It's called texting. And I just don't, you know, I you know, I and that was not a jab at you, Christy. That was a jab at Instagram. It's just a text message in Instagram, which is fine. There's no reason to not have that feature. But there's also no reason to use that feature. You know, the only thing that, like I said, the only thing that Snapchat added was that the picture automatically deletes itself, but it doesn't. You know, and that's what irritates me about it.
Mm-hmm. All right, man. Let's bring it home.
All right. I got one more.
Go ahead, it's your story.
Oh, yeah. So...
awkward silence.
Sorry. Woo. That's all right. It's all the way at the top. So the NSA has hacked into your iPhone and got all your photos. And
what are you doing? Oh, I thought you were going to do the AT&T one.
Oh.
All right. You get one more, so choose.
The NSA one's kind of – okay, the NSA one's – the reason I'm not going to do the NSA one is because basically what they do is they've got a backdoor to – they figured out a backdoor to the iPhone, and they claim that this is the big thing. They basically have claimed that they've never had an iPhone that they couldn't compromise, but they had to have it, like, physically, like, have it. And basically every computer, like, I had this, like, big thing about, like, what it meant, what it probably was. And then a bunch of computer scientists came on and, like, dude, you can compromise any computer that you have actual – have in your possession. That's nothing, not a big deal. That's why it's not a big deal. But the AT&T T-Mobile one, basically AT&T, they're saying if you're on T-Mobile right now, you got your phone, you got your month-to-month contract thing, and you're loving it, but you want to get over to a real network like AT&T, you just can't justify it because it costs too much. $450 coming your way if you switch over to AT&T.
Wow, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a lot of bones, man. You know, that's a couple of months worth of of bills for your contracts and whatnot. And I didn't really get too much into the context of this deal because I am not on T-Mobile and it doesn't really affect me. But basically, it's the deal offers converts a minimum of 200 once they've subscribed to a smartphone plan, plus up to 250 more if they trade in an existing phone. There's no much mention of when the promo will end, although it's described as a limited time offer. So basically, what's going on? T-Mobile is doing some serious damage. It's pretty awesome. You know, they're actually getting people to switch over, and AT&T's having to react. Creative destruction of capitalism and free markets. Woohoo! Basically, AT&T and T-Mobile is pretty. The T-Mobile CEO. Thanks for liking my Instagram photo, James. My ringer was on.
I sent you one.
Oh, did you? You sent me one.
I was testing the direct message to see if it disappeared or not. It doesn't.
That's cool. It doesn't. You know what I love about that? It tells you everybody that you sent
it
to.
Oh, it says that you saw your – I saw your photo.
That's cool. But you know what's really cool? One of the really cool things about it is it will tell you everybody you sent it to, just like a text message. And like there were like early on there was posts of somebody who was like he sent a direct message to his girl. I was like, good night, baby. I love you so much. But he sent it to all of his girlfriends and all of them could see all of them. Like, ooh, you're in trouble. So be aware if you're cheating on girls. Or get caught. I don't care. I don't like you. So the T-Mobile CEO slams AT&T for trying to buy back customers. Basically, he's saying that this is like the guy sort of looks like Loki from Thor, which is pretty awesome because he's like AT&T must truly be desperate to be turning to this. Actually quoted. Was, you know, basically quoting Loki. I don't think he did it on purpose either. That's the best part. But basically he's saying that, like, they know AT&T's or T-Mobile's doing well. They're getting all sorts of customers. He's predicting that AT&T had a terrible Q4, and they're going to get desperate. And then on top of it, the move is believed to be a preemptive strike ahead of T-Mobile's fourth Un-carrier announcement, which is coming next week at CES 2014 and is believed to include an offer to reimburse contract termination fees for customers who switch from another carrier to T-Mobile, which, James, just saying, if that's a sweet enough deal, we need to seriously talk.
Oh, man.
My problem
is right now with five of us on AT&T, it's actually competitive rate-wise with other offerings.
Yeah.
If you guys start leaving me, that's where it won't make sense anymore.
See, my problem is I get unlimited LTE if I go over to
them. I know. I get it. You should do it as your brother and friend. You should do it. Especially if they're going to reimburse you, that would be pretty darn awesome.
Yeah, because I would, you know what would basically happen. This is my fourth iPhone.
You always
in the last 13 months.
One.
My fourth one.
Wow, you're amazing at holding on to this.
I know it is actually kind of amazing, and Apple keeps giving me new ones. So like the first one I dropped.
Do you have Apple Care Plus?
Oh heck yeah.
Okay.
I knew I needed it. The first one broke when I dropped it. The second one broke when I dropped it in a vat of it took a bath in antifreeze. So the third one, which I got replaced today, manufacturing defect. The plug. The plugs are supposed to be switchable, so you can switch them left and right. It would only work one way. which was really weird. I couldn't figure out why. And then, and like certain plugs, like the plug for my car charger wouldn't work. And I couldn't figure out why.
That's frustrating.
It's really frustrating. So I took it into the Apple store like a week ago, and they were like, I think it just had like some junk in there. So they pulled it out, seemed to work fine. While I was in the store, I took it back home, wasn't working. So this time I actually took all my chargers and plugs and everything. I was like, look, guys, we're checking if it, like, I'm telling you it doesn't work. The dude took one look in the port and goes, well, you're missing your second pin, so that might be a problem. And I was like, whoa, that's probably is the problem. So, yeah, so they gave me a new one. I say all that to say, I have a brand new battery, and I am ready to use and abuse it. Let me get some unlimited LTE. That'd be awesome. Oh, my goodness. Streaming Netflix anywhere, anytime. Oh, man. I could wreck this phone in a serious way. Kind of stoked. the batteries are supposed to last for 2 years.
T-Mobile, huh?
Yeah. It'd be awesome.
What is that monthly rate? Do you know it off the top of your head?
If it's
you
70 bucks for unlimited okay. LTE. And you know what the other awesome part about it would be? And this actually is like as big a selling point as anything. That's unlimited LTE with tethering, which would mean my iPad all of a sudden, my iPad all of a sudden becomes like really valuable because I can use it
seriously
anywhere, anytime. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's actually a pretty good deal.
Yeah, I know. It's a great deal. It's actually, and the best part about it is I'm paying $70 a month right now. Now, granted, you know, because of stuff, I realize it wouldn't pan out perfectly for me, but it would be like 15 bucks more a month. And like, I don't know. It seems like a really stupid decision that I'm willing to make. So I don't know.
Tethering, that's huge. Well,
I know, that's what I'm saying. Unlimited tethering. I would wreck their entire network. I'd just be like, why don't you ever stop, you know, streaming stuff? Like I know you're asleep. Why are you still doing this?
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, I've got CenturyLink internet for home, right? And we don't have a telephone, we don't do cable, stuff like that. And I totally keep toying around with the idea of just like, dude, what if we just went all mobile? What would that look like? You know? And I mean, because we've got 3G, we've got 4G here, I think, or LTE or something like that. It depends. But, you know, I'm like, man, the speeds would actually be pretty good. We could run this podcast totally over that network. But that might be the kind of thing where if I drop that altogether, save myself – you know, whatever it is, 50 bucks a month.
Lo siento. Not unlimited tethering. 2.5 gigs.
All right.
That 2.5 gigs is pretty good for me, but...
Oh, yeah, you know. Yeah. If you were using it for tethering on the, you know, occasion with your iPad, yeah.
Right.
If for what I was talking about, that would not work.
Right.
Okay. All right. Interesting.
Yeah, which I think is the reason why they do it that way, because... You know, that's...
Yeah. Then I guess I would be doing work stuff, and sometimes I pull down 2 gigs in, you know, however long it takes me to pull down 2 gigs.
Right, exactly.
But, okay, all right. Huh, interesting, though. So they're getting after each other and going after pocketbooks.
Yeah, I love it. And the best part about it is that T-Mobile is getting aggressive with service and pricing, and AT&T is getting aggressive with gimmicks. Which, you know, a long term.
We're currently on team AT&T. So,
well, I mean,
we gotta be a little careful there.
Define on team. I mean,
well, we pay for their service. In the sense that you're on Apple's team right now.
I'm not on that. That's totally different. I'm an advocate.
I gotcha. I understand. You know. You hinted at it, but next week is CES.
I know, so I'm super stoked.
We will be talking a lot about that next week. And then the following week, Matthew will have a special guest on because I will be the happiest place on earth. And I'll be doing that.
I think that's technically Disneyland. I think Disney World comes in second, yeah.
Are you sure about that?
I'm not, but I that's what that I was always under the impression that Disney World is just sort of maybe Disney properties are just, I don't know.
Whatever. I'll be in Florida where it's warm. Yeah. It was super cold today. It was bad. It was freezing out. But that's what will be going on. So, as I quickly pull up everything so we're going to close it out for this week. Just, you know, talked about a bunch of stuff. And like I said, next week will be mostly CES stuff, I think, other than the Apple story that Matthew manages to sneak in there. And then, I'm going to keep learning about Android and what that means and tablets, and that'll be cool. And, so we'll have, like, more stories than we know how to keep up with, but that's always fun, too. So, everybody, thanks for joining us. I am James Furlow, and my resolute brother is Matthew Furlow, and so we will talk next time. So my phone is actually set up so that it does a do not disturb from like 10 p.m. to 6 a.m.
Yeah.
And, you know, which is nice because it means halfway through this podcast, nothing gets through. Except, and this is the weird part, even if I have do not disturb on my phone, I will still get notifications on my watch. Doesn't stop that.
That's annoying.
Yeah. So, you know, middle of the night, get a text message or, you know, something, buzz. Oh, great. Awesome. I would kind of like that to be not disturbing.
Yeah, but, come on, well, guys.
That's the way it works. It'll get there. Apparently, Pebble is making some announcement at CES on Monday, so I'm excited to read what that is. Who knows? Developer API stuff. Yay! Yeah, really make me jealous then. Like, no! I got an old model.